It's Elsie's Little Pickles. We're back with another pickle pod. And we're not jerking your gherkin. We're going to make it happen. One more pickle pod is all we all need, isn't it, at the end of the day?
I think we should design and produce a male masturbatory fleshlight, but call it the pickle pod.
You know, God damn, sometimes you're disturbing even to me, and that's a high bar.
Well, thank you. I take that as a compliment.
I mean, doing a fleshlight that looks like a fucking one of the Elsie's Little Pickles characters, oh, God. And we'd have to do
it doesn't have to look like one of us, you sicko.
Oh, well, that's what I thought you were doing. Oh, you're just saying a generic pickle?
That's right.
What good is that? I mean, if we're going to do it, you got to make it to where they're fucking one of us, don't you think?
Believe me, if it looked like you, when you slid it in a dick, it would look like one of the squeezy toys.
Eyes yeah, popping bulging. Out. Oh, fuck. This is not how I expected to start this show.
I hope I disturb you all.
No, you definitely disturb me. Like I said, I mean, it takes a lot to do so, but boy, you are on the mark.
It is my gift in life.
So what do we got going? Anything interesting?
What do we got going? Well, sir.
Tell me, sir.
I'm going to tell you about some. Robot dogs with AI weapons undergo testing by the U.S. Marines. And let me just say, just the picture alone, I want. I don't care if it has weapons. I mean, AI, cool. But I just want it to follow me around and tell people to fuck off.
Well, I guess the question kind of becomes, let's say, you know, they create the civilian model, and you can just have it as a pet, a lifelong pet. Mm-hmm. The AI part of it, would it be a talking dog? Or would it be just...
I would
think you could.
I would enjoy where you could switch it from just barking like a normal dog to talking.
And silent.
Yes.
Because I there have been many a times I wish my dog had a silent button.
Oh, it does. You just got to flick its balls.
Oh, yeah. Well, he doesn't have any. So.
Oh, that's the point.
Yeah.
You done told him twice already.
What do you think will happen if they start using like military AI robotic dogs with weapons? I mean, how is this? I mean, look, I'm always of the opinion that if bad shit in the world is going to exist, like this type of weaponry, which I consider to be badass shit, that I would rather our side has it than any other side. But typically, as is the case, we come up with a new weapon, and the next thing you know, within a couple of years, everyone else has that weapon as well. So I'm curious, what do you think it would be used for, and how do you see that playing out?
They've discussed in the article that I read where it would start, a starting point would be for tracking individuals. Just set out the AI attack dog. And you want to talk about something you ain't getting away from?
Well,
this AI
unless you throw it a robotic bone, but I got to imagine that there's some way they could jam the signal on it. I guess is my point. Is like you would think
you got to remember that they used AI as a navigation to drive that satellite into that moving meteor comet. How far away?
Right.
It took 6 months to get there. I don't think jamming an AI robot like that would really work all that easily.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking. I have no idea. Like,
this also goes back to the older podcast we did about Civil War and the what is it? The SEAL Team McSix, we called it.
You called it SEAL Team McSix. It's it's the Gravy Seals.
The Gravy Seals. These, you know, guys out in the woods who think they're going to overthrow the government. Wait until you meet the AI attack dogs.
Well, see, that goes back to what I was saying in that episode is this idea that any off-the-shelf weaponry at all. I don't, or protection gear, whatever, right? It's nothing. It's nothing. There's not a gun that you can buy over the counter, right? That's going to compare to what the military is going to bring. You know, like, I'm sorry, but if you get the most powerful gun available to the public and they roll up in a tank, you got nothing. You got nothing.
Well, I've also heard the argument from people who are like, well, government can't get to me because, you know, the terrain that I'm in, only I know this area all that well.
Yeah, it's called
you fucking Google Map.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, welcome to Google Maps, bitch. Like, this thinking is crazy.
But satellites and Google Street Views have been everywhere.
Yeah, you're not beating that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of it beyond the point of like used in, I'm just saying, if you're using a robotic AI dog that has weaponry, whatever that is, and I don't know if that's, you know, the dog stands on its back legs and pulls a 9mm out or a six shooter, like it's an old West. I don't know. Right.
Now this particular dog, it has the face of a dog, like face and neck, basically, but it descends into something you would see out of the Jetsons. And I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to guess on the opposite side there would be a sixth, but six rotating barrels of various diameters.
Really?
Yeah. And it can basically walk or run or roll.
Okay. Now, my question is if it's running away from you, can it lift its tail and shoot you out of its asshole?
Well, I would not support spending the kind of money on these things if it could not. I'm just saying. And it had better
be it's got to be
hardcore dookie.
Yeah, you want to see a 50 cal round shoot out of a dog's ass.
I'm just saying.
Even if it was just a six shooter.
Even if it was just a turd launcher, like a potato gun. Oh, shooting rock hard turds at you.
Oh, that's funny.
I'd be all for it.
I don't know. I guess when I look at the landscape that seems to be playing out when it comes to AI and when it comes to robotics and war, you know, there's a little bit of me that is concerned that the robots that are armed, you know, they turn.
This dog doesn't have arms.
No. The weaponry that they turn on you. You know what I mean? Like where's the fail safe? What is the fail safe in that system where you can shut her down? And if you have that, then it becomes a known quantity. And then why can't the enemy also use that technology to shut it down? So I could see the idea of it being like the robotic dog is going into places where you can't necessarily send a human. I could see it being like sneaking up on snipers and stuff like that. But I would think, you know, like I wouldn't see it as, you know, a whole battlefield of, you know, robotic dogs on our side versus robotic dogs on their side. I don't think that would ever play out.
I don't think that would happen.
It'd be entertaining as all fuck.
A pocket of insurrectionists and their two dogs.
Yeah.
Let loose the dogs of war.
Make sure the ass cannon is loaded. I wonder if that would have to be a muzzle.
The ass cannon is on this mop.
I wonder if the ass cannon would have to be like a muzzle loader. You stick the thing in and then fucking... All right.
Now, for some good news, I read an article here about the best and the worst of alcoholic beverages for your health. Would you like to take a guess as to some of the worst?
The worst? Alcohol, the worst alcoholic beverages for your heart. Is that what it was?
For your health.
Oh, for your health. Okay.
You just your overall health.
Worst alcoholic beverages would have to be any of the high sugar flavored ones, I would think.
Well, this is specifically drinks and stuff. So I'm looking for specific beverages.
So what when you say specific beverages, are you referring to specific brands or are you referring to if it's a whiskey versus a gin versus a tequila?
Well, I'll give you the first one.
Okay.
One of the worst you can order is actually a pina colada.
Because you'll end up walking on a beach in the rain? Catch a bad cold?
You like pina coladas? No, but a pina colada has more, I don't remember if it was sugar or salt.
It would be sugar, I'm sure. Okay, so then you're talking about mixed drinks.
It can be, it's all of them.
Okay, I would say that one of the ones that are best for you, I don't know if you have a best list on this, but one of the ones that are best for you is a red wine.
Yes, that is actually number one.
And then my next guess for best for you would be probably whiskey.
You would be correct. Whiskies, scotches, and the such are chock full of polyphenols, which are linked to lowering your risk of heart disease, decreasing bad cholesterol, reducing triglycerides or fat in your blood. Just to, you know, avoid mixins, which, I mean, let's face it, you got a good whiskey and you try to get me to use a mix-in with it, I'm going to punch you in the fucking nose.
No, the mix-ins are only for the you know, the well whiskeys. if
the Jack Daniels and such. Yeah, that's right. I'm looking at you, Jack.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, Jack. Fucking Jack. Southern Comfort. I got my eye on you too.
Oh God. That's even worse than Jack Daniels.
I fucking hate Southern Comfort. I don't think that those are really, in my opinion, they're not real whiskey.
No.
There's something, but not.
It's whiskey flavored sugar water.
Yeah. And I would say that that's like, you know, that's why I asked if, are we talking brands or whatever? Because like Fireball is an example. That's got to be one of the worst fucking whiskeys for you to drink. It is so sugary.
Yeah.
It is so just loaded.
Yeah. I'd rather have the hot damn mixed with like an actual whiskey.
Yeah.
If I had to do something like that.
If you had to, but I who fucking wants to? Yeah. Who wants to?
You know when hot damn is good? When you have put some in like, you know, some cider and it's like fall. Otherwise, no respecting person should have to touch it outside of fall.
Right. All right, so we've in this was five that are good and five that are bad, was it?
Oh, just in general.
Oh, okay.
Well, this has got
I would say the next one that is good for you, so I already did red wine, scotches, and whiskeys. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a toss-up, but I'm going to lean into vodka.
Yes, vodka with basically a seltzer water, not tonic water, because tonic is full of sugar. But yeah, vodkas with seltzers.
What about straight?
I'll give you what's that?
What about just straight vodka, like just a shot of vodka?
There are people that drink vodka straight.
Yeah, I do.
What is wrong with you?
Vodka straight. That's
you
how
monster.
I know I'm an animal, but that was how I would always know if I liked it enough to mix it with anything.
See, I have a personal issue with vodka. It is that alcoholic drink you give to your friends when you don't like them.
No, I was a big vodka drinker. It's interesting you say that because vodka. From, I don't know, 17.
Vodka, to me, is like the tofu of alcohol.
Well, I would agree with you there, but there was a period of time.
I'm saying that because I fucking hate tofu.
Yeah, but you're also saying it because tofu can take on the taste of anything else. So like if you.
Yeah, that's weird.
If you soaked cucumber into vodka, you'd have cucumber flavored vodka.
Oh, that would be even worse.
Or you put pineapple or papaya or whatever.
Cucumbers. I hate the taste of cucumbers. Oh my God.
Vodka is.
It's curious that they're always cold.
What? The cucumbers?
Yeah.
They're not always cold. Not always.
Cucumbers naturally are always cooling.
Well, they're cooling.
I don't know if you know that or not.
No, I didn't know that. But I've had a warm cuke. I'm not proud of it. It's not warm something I'm bragging cuke, huh? about.
You know why you don't eat cuke? Because it sounds like puke.
And then I would go gin and then tequila.
Tequila actually by itself is not so bad for you. It's right up there with whiskey. Some of the horrible things for you are naturally the pina colada. A lot of the whiskey and cokes, anything you mix
with
the regular
soda. But you know what I do like? You know what I do like? A whiskey sour.
Oh, I do like whiskey sour.
Yeah, and I would even say an old fashioned, but if given the choice
between... I like old fashions.
If given the choice between an old fashioned and whiskey sour, I'm going whiskey sour.
I'm 50-50. I like them both.
Yeah, I do like them both, but I lean more towards whiskey sour.
Another healthy one is the Bloody Mary.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But it was really shocking to see how many bad for you, a lot of craft beer falls into the bad for you because they pop up the carbs and try to give it some kind of flavoring.
Yeah, they pop up those carbs a lot in the...
Yeah.
See, that's the thing is I know...
That's what it was. A pina colada has more carbs in it than a Big Mac meal.
Well, that's why you have to go for a walk in the rain.
All right. None of these lead you to wanting to go for a walk.
No. Stumble, but maybe a stumble.
Also, the Red Bull and what is it?
Jaeger.
That is a bad combination because one is a sedative, one is a stimulant, and it actually can harm your heart.
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that at all. Yeah. I don't doubt that at all. I used to love Jaeger bombs, and I wouldn't do them as shots. I would do them as drinks. So it would be like a double Jaeger bomb with some ice. And there were plenty of shows where I'd have, you know, second show about halfway in, I'm about six double Jaeger bombs in, and I didn't know where I was coming or going. You know, like my heart was beating.
I read today that Jaeger bombs for the last 20, 25 years that they've been around have caused a lot of heart issues and even enlarging hearts.
I don't doubt that at all.
It's a muscle.
Right.
And that muscle's got to work. And so they say that could be one of the leading causes of heart issues. Heart enlargement.
Well, there you go. Where's rum? Where's rum fall on all that? I would think it wouldn't be good for you because it's so sweet.
Yeah, that is the issue.
It's the sugar content.
Correct. Anything with a lot of sugar, which that also leads to a lot more of a hangover effect.
See, that's what I learned early on was if you removed the sugar, because I used to drink Captain and Diet. And I would wake up with a hangover, even though I was drinking diet.
A combination of too much sugar and then the dehydration effect.
Right. So I got to the point, I don't know how you came to whiskey, but I went through vodka and gin.
I just like the taste. Gin and whiskey are my two.
I went through vodka, gin, and tequila. And I had a bad spurt with Southern Comfort. Yeah.
I've never had an issue with Southern Comfort. I've always hated Southern Comfort.
Well, my issue was not so much the drink itself, but I think that the bartender roofied me.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I made it out alive. I didn't get fucked in the ass. You know, none of that shit. But he thought that he was doing me a favor, but didn't tell me what that favor was. So I had no idea what the fuck was going on. And like... To this day.
Come here, smell this. Does this smell like chloroform? Yeah,
exactly. Does this smell like chloroform? And so like that just turned me off on that completely. And you hear everyone always say, well, you know, whatever the alcohol is, you know, everyone has a story and that's why they don't drink it anymore. But that was my Southern Comfort thing. So I got turned off of whiskey for quite a long time. And where I came back to it
Worse. Well, there's nothing worse than a long night of drinking Southern Comfort, waking up with a headache and that butt hurting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's always tough.
Yeah, yeah. And you fart, and there's a little more than just a fart that came out.
Just a touch. I'm not going to tell you what, but it wasn't a color I expected.
Nope.
The thing was, is for me.
You know what they call that, actually?
Sharding.
Oh, sharding is, that is such, it's a rough word. There's an anger about it, sharding.
There's a lot of hard consonants.
I prefer fooping.
Fooping.
Oh, I just fooped. Oops. Bad, I just fooped.
That's fucking funny. But I went through a thing with like rum for a while. So I was drinking Captain and Diets. And then I prior to that, I was drinking not a lot of tequila, but I would, if there was a nice brand, I would drink it because I got turned on to nice high-end tequila for a period of time after I'd done a radio show. They also did a whiskey or did a alcohol show and cigar show. And so they have this closet full of just all these high-end boozes. And I had two shots of $300 a bottle tequila. I wish I could remember the name of it. It was amazing. It was absolutely fucking delicious. So I went through a tequila phase for a bit, but prior to that, I was pretty much vodka. And I'd mix it, you know what I mean? I would do it straight. You know, I always tried it straight first to see if I liked it straight. And if I didn't like it necessarily straight, you know, but I was on the fence about it, then I'd make it a mixer, you know, with some juice or whatever. You know, the old screwdrivers and shit like that. But I came back around to whiskey because I'd gotten to a point where I realized that I was actually more interested in the flavor. And that was where I started to recognize whiskeys can give you, and I'm not talking flavored bullshit, okay? You know, I don't need a fucking cinnamon flavor or orange or whatever. But so when it comes to whiskeys, I started to realize that there was just so many variants. You know, like I recognized that with craft beer. But I was never really a big beer drinker. You know what I mean? And the reason is,
I love a good beer. It's just,
oh, I love it. Like,
I don't do IPAs. IPAs are, again, that beer when you want to fuck with your buddies and give them something that tastes fucking awful. I don't care who you are. You drink IPAs, there's something wrong with your taste buds. But there's a lot of variants. I like whiskeys, Irish whiskey, bourbon. But my particular favorite is always going to be Scotch because there's more of a variety in the realm of Scotch than bourbon. No matter what any redneck says down south, you've pretty much got four types of bourbons. And in the Scotch world, you've got like 12.
See, I'm still learning Scotch, all right?
Yeah, everybody is still learning Scotch because there's such a variety.
And what I have found is most people will, you know, so I came to it from Irish whiskeys. I'm not a fan of Canadians, you know.
Yeah, that is curious for me because with Canadian whiskeys, there's almost a sweetness to them that's like artificial. Now, there's something about Canadian whiskeys. I love everything else that's Canadian, really. Except for Canadian whiskey.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and no offense to Canada, but there is a sweetness that is reminiscent of bourbons for me, or Tennessee whiskeys.
Bourbon. Don't let Jack Daniels fool you. They're not a bourbon because they didn't want to pay the tax.
Oh, yeah. But
that's the truth of it.
At the end of the day, the way I look at it is, what am I getting from this? Aside from the buzz, you know what I mean? Aside from the obvious. And I have found that my palate prefers the honey, the butter biscuit. And I know that those are things that you would consider to be sweet, but the way that they express themselves in an Irish whiskey is not the same as the candy sweet that you get from a bourbon or a Canadian. And I've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard,
usually the biscuit flavor isn't so much like a cookie, but more like a shortbread where you get a little bit buttery,
right,
and the wheat flavoring rather than the sweetness.
Yeah,
and just for clarification,
and the that little bit of that wheat flavor, it goes a long way, you know.
Yes.
So like I was in.
That's why my favorite whiskeys are the wheated bourbons.
I would probably agree with you on that. I find that even in beer,
my wallet doesn't like that.
No, but even in beer, don't you find that the weeded you find yourself more drawn to a weeded beer than you do like?
I was about to. Oh, I've got one right here. No, I don't. I threw it out. I've got a case of blackberry wheat beer. It's actually at my feet.
Right? I was going to say, I bet that's really good.
It's delicious.
So this has been my understanding of whiskeys and your, or scotches rather. You're far.
I'm a Scotch guy.
Yeah, you are totally a Scotch guy. You're the closest thing in my life to a walking encyclopedia when it comes to scotches. I always defer to you.
We should do a Scotch show.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Yeah.
Or we could do an entire show on just Scotch alone.
Well, I don't know that I could do that. I could definitely contribute to the Irish side of that. The Irish whiskeys. I could definitely go toe-to-toe with you in knowledge on Irish versus your knowledge of Scotch. But correct me if I'm wrong, because I've heard this multiple times. People tell you if you're coming from a bourbon or you're coming from a Irish or you're coming from Canadian and you're trying to wrap your head around Scotches and wrap your palate around Scotches, Islay is not where you start.
No.
But that's where I started. And I'm going to tell you something. Lagavulin, specifically Lagavulin 16. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's an abstract piece of art.
It is absolutely like every bottle is just, it's so on point and it has so many flavor expressions. And there's like, if you give it time and you really, you know, try to enjoy it, you definitely, it's one of those whiskeys that if you don't nose it first, if you don't do that, you're wasting your experience. You know, there's some whiskeys you shoot just to get it down the gullet.
Yeah, they're generally not good whiskeys.
Jack Daniels
is one of them.
Lagavulin is one of those whiskeys that, like, you want that shot and a half, you know, you want that to last because you're sipping that. You're sipping it because you want to experience all the flavors in it. And I swear to you, it's like every time I get a bottle of Lagavulin 16, I discover something new in it. That reminds me of, or, oh my God, how did I not notice that before? I mean, it's one of those rare, rare experiences for me, at least at this point. Now, with that being said, first off, what would you say is your favorite Scotch at this moment? And it's at this moment, not all time. It's at this moment, the one that you really like. If you know,
I have a hard time doing that because I can't just say a favorite Scotch. I can say a favorite type of Scotch.
Okay,
but
are you a Speyside? Are you an Islay? Or
I like them all.
Well, that's your favorite Scotch.
Very different reasons. Islay's my. Taste is obviously Lagavulin, but also some of the Ardbegs like Corbrecken. I love Corbrecken.
Yeah, Ardbeg is really good. There's a lot of, I mean, that, you want to talk about a fan base. Ardbeg seems to have the largest fan base of the Scotches.
They refer to as the cult of Ardbeg.
Yeah, it really seems to be that way too, because you get an Ardbeg person, they're like, fuck everything else. I'm drinking Ardbeg. Like, they're not even interested.
What's your favorite type of Tennessee bourbon? Ardbeg.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the response you get. What's your favorite Kool-Aid flavor?
Ardbeg.
But Highland Scotches, I would say.
See, I've never had a Highland.
Favorite. You got to have a Highland. It's more towards the rain, maybe, of an Irish whiskey. but more Scottish.
So it just got
more Scotch.
In the sense of the...
My favorite, though, is probably Aberfeldy.
Hold on.
Yeah.
When you're talking Highland, and you're saying it's Irish, but it's more with the Scotch, right?
Yes.
Are you talking about the meatiness? Because, like, obviously, when you get into your Islas, there's almost a meaty flavor to it.
Yeah, with Islas, you get a lot of peat, iodine, like it's made from seawater, and it's going to
bring you a brisket sandwich. Yeah, it's giving you
cooked over a roaring wood fire.
It's giving you all the
hardcore.
You're
going to take that sip, and it's going to poke you in the fucking face with its thumb and take your wallet.
Exactly.
There's just something, you know, it puts hair on your chest.
But that's not what you're getting with a Highland.
There's so much going on with Islas. With Highlands, and Speysides are a lot more refined, aristocratic, if you will.
So you're saying that the flavors aren't, you know, where a Isla is a bar fight that you got punched in the face. The space
an Isla is a bar fight that you got punched in the face and the nuts, and then the person who did it just got you a sandwich to go, you know,
to have take a drink
home with them afterwards.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you're saying that the Highland and the Speyside are going to be more like, we're having a disagreement, not buying you a sandwich, but here's a bowl of nuts.
Well,
here is a cucumber sandwich.
Highland Scotches and Speysides are a little more of the, why don't you pull up a seat? We're going to have a little talk. I'm going to tell you a story and we're going to have a good time.
And here's a jam sandwich.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aberfeldy is very honeyed, that dry fruit. It's just delicious.
There's
a couple of Speysides that I found that had a background, an after flavor of like coconut, like toasted coconut or banana even.
All right. So I give you a credit card and I say, you get to pick one bottle of Scotch. Doesn't matter how much it costs. One bottle of Scotch. What do you want?
I'm going to go with Aberfeldy 21.
Okay. That makes sense.
Either Aberfeldy 21 or the top shelf of the Delmore.
Oh, really? Delmore?
I've got two Delmores, and I've got the 12-year, which is like their...
I haven't heard you speak of these much. Yeah, that's why I'm a little shocked. Not that it's not a good Scotch. I just... Or that I could even have an opinion on it. I've never tried it. It's just I've never heard you speak of it.
Have you seen it?
I've seen it in the store, probably.
Okay.
You know, the name sounds familiar. I don't know I know I haven't ever tried it, but I don't know that I ever even knew to look to it.
Yeah, I've got the Delmore 12 and the Delmore Cigar Malt currently.
But the 21 would be your...
Aberfeldy 21 or the... I think it's the King Alexander from Delmore, which is their big one. You're talking about a grand.
Well, that's
maybe
why...
Maybe 500.
That's why I'm not giving you my credit card. All right, so you were saying you got one more story for me?
Yes, and other news. Students walk out at Duke University to Jerry Seinfeld's speech. And what was that, a commencement? Where he gets a fake diploma?
Yeah.
But he has made some comments about the left woke people destroying comedy, which I understand in some ways. People who are too quick to judge or try to cancel people. Comedy doesn't work that way.
Well,
some comedy needs to be dangerous.
That's the thing.
But he's also made some comments supporting Israel because, well, let's face it, he's Jewish. You're going to support your homeland. I mean, I'm Scottish. I would support Scotland in just about anything.
Yeah.
But
I'm Irish. I would support Ireland. I mean, and not even from the point of view that I was born in Ireland, but I know that that's my heritage. You know that Scotland's your heritage. We're both adopted.
British, Scottish, Irish.
Yeah. And for me, it's
from Norwegian.
It's British or English and Irish. I can see having a sense of loyalty to not wanting the place that you were, your family originated from, wiped out. And I would see the same thing for Palestine. So let's back up for a second. A, the Palestinian-Israeli issue, I wish I knew enough about it to be able to speak educatedly. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about it. I know that I don't know enough about it. I know that TikTok videos and social media posts don't educate me enough on it. I know that this is a issue that's gone on for a long time. I mean, you could take it back to 47, but I'm pretty sure it goes back, you know, 2,000-3,000 years. I'm pretty sure that this issue is not fucking new. All right.
Well, there is a joke, and it's funny because it's true. But why did Christopher Columbus set sail and try a different route? Because he was trying to avoid the Middle East.
Yeah. And who would blame you? And who would blame you? What I have a hard time with is believing that no matter how educated the vast majority of those students are, and it's not just they've done this not just during Seinfeld. Not just at Duke. They've done this at U of M. There was a chick that tore up her fucking diploma, which it's not the diploma. It's a fake, you know, diploma that they hand you on stage, and she tore it up like she was making some sort of big statement. No, you want to make a big statement? Tear up your actual fucking diploma in front of me. Let me see that. But the problem is that when you're an art major, right? Or you're a business school major, or you're a law school major, how much do you actually know about what's going on in Palestine and between Israel and Hamas and the Palestinian people? You're only making your decision based on what you see on social media. You're making your position based on what your friends' positions are. And the vast majority of them probably don't know enough to actually have a position. Now, that's not saying I'm supporting Israel, and that's not saying I'm supporting Palestine or Hamas. I'm saying I know, as a grown man, I don't know enough about the issue at this moment to be able to speak eloquently on it. I also know I live far enough away that I don't give a fuck enough to dig through, you know, 1,000 years of historical problems between a group of people I don't fucking care. Figure it out. You've had a long time. Figure it out. You guys are going to be neighbors one way or the other. Figure it out. You know what I mean? And I would say that about the entire fucking Middle East. Figure it out, man. Figure it out. It's not going to happen shooting each other. It's not going to happen bombing each other. It's not going to happen through military action. It could, but it's probably not. Because even if you...
What if you had two sides, like a boxing, and you sold out the event to Palestinians and the other side to Israelites, the Israeli people. And in that boxing ring, you marketed it is going to be a slugfest between
Netanyahu.
Not in your lifetime.
Yeah, exactly.
but between the Hebrew God and the, what is it, Islamic?
Yeah.
Am I correct Muhammad. In that assumption?
Yeah, Muhammad.
Well, Muhammad was the prophet.
Yeah, so it would be, well, yeah, but... Yeah, it would be Allah versus Yahweh, which is the same fucking thing.
Allah versus Yahweh. And you have the you know, the Don King-like promotion. It's going to be a slugfest, a duke out, a fight out, a gun shootout, whatever, in this very ring. And winner takes all. Obviously, neither one of them is going to show.
Yeah. You make a good point.
And you just have
make it pay-per-view
lights coming down. Exactly. Coming down to the ring. And nothing happens because, let's face it, nothing will happen.
And even if you...
And you make it where you're like, well, we can't see who won. I guess nobody won. I guess we're just going to have to get along.
You would think, if only it were that fucking easy. But like I said, we've gotten to the point where it seems like society is actually turning to stand-up comedians for, like, a moral compass, right? And that's not our job.
Along that lines.
That's not the job of the comedian.
Are you a fan of Conan O'Brien?
I am.
He does a show called Conan O'Brien Without Borders.
Okay.
Conan Without Borders. And a few years ago, I want to say 5-6 years ago, had to be at least, he went to Jerusalem, also went to the Palestinian side, and was just talking about the beauty of everything, and it was very interesting. Yet, you also saw the human aspect of Conan, because he was approached by both sides about this conflict, and neither one wanted to fight. They just wanted the word out of what was going on. And you felt sorry for Conan because he's in the middle. They all saw cameras on like a celebrity and wanted some attention. And you could see him trying to relate, trying to talk to these people, like trying to calm them down a little bit, make them feel better. And it was beautiful, but also sad.
But that's my point, is like, you can't turn to the comedian to solve every crisis. The comedian's job is to hold up the mirror. And if you don't like what you see in the mirror, clean your fucking mirror. But if you like what you see in that mirror and you're able to laugh, your day is going to be a little bit better. Or you're going to see things in a different way. Or maybe that you know, hypocritical viewpoint that you didn't recognize as hypocritical, suddenly you work that out, you know what I mean? Or that prejudice you had, you go, it's silly, you know what I mean? That's the job.
I judge everybody, their ability to laugh at themselves.
You have to laugh at yourself.
If you ever see me around my friends, the people that I choose to be around, you would notice that they have, at a drop of a dime, they'll say something degrading.
Yeah, just bust your balls.
About themselves. Or, you know, like, we'll bust each other's balls, but there's several of us, James, Scott, what's up, you guys? That is like our way of telling each other we love them.
Yeah, that's, I think that's often mistaken too, because that happens a lot in comedy green rooms, you know what I mean? You'll go back and forth busting balls with each other, but that's how you know that person actually respects and loves you, you know what I mean? And it may sound horrible in the moment, but that's actually, it's a sign of love and respect. But my point is that here we're in a situation where somebody like Seinfeld, who is arguably, I don't care, look, he's not my style of stand-up necessarily. I think he's really great at what he does. I think, you know, I think he's brilliant. I also think he's the most purest of all of us. He's the most purest in the sense of he literally doesn't really care about what the conversation is if it's not going to end up into something that's funny that he can be used on stage, whether for him or for somebody else.
I want to add an analogy, if you will. I guess if that's the right word for this. In the wrestling world, when a new wrestler comes in, pro wrestler, there is a sense of, how do I say, etiquette, where you introduce yourself to everybody, from the number one wrestler to the bottom rank. You introduce yourself, you shake hands. But this is where the tricky part is. Wrestlers have a way of shaking hands with each other. It is not a hearty, you know, how you doing? It is the softest. You try to barely touch the person because it is a sign of how you're going to treat them in the ring. Because when you're in the ring, you, as a wrestler, you have to give your body, the safety of your body to that other person. You give them your body to
execute
moves, and you've got to show that other wrestler beforehand, I'm going to hit you as hard as I can, but not really.
Right. Yeah, I'm gonna sneak up on it. I'm going to give you the gradual, you know, but again, I think that when you look at the idea of where stand-up is falling in today's world, it's one of those things where it's like everything is about the divide.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything's about the divide. And I don't care if it's a social issue, eventually it gets down to, well, you're either right or left in your view. And I don't think that that's the way to go. You know what I mean? Like, you see a lot of comedians, you were talking earlier that you were disappointed with the Kevin James special, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just didn't think it was all that funny. It was like he was trying to be extra safe.
And he was. He was trying to be extra safe. He hadn't done stand-up in a special.
What, 15 years?
Well, in a special, probably 10, 15 years. This was going to be big. And he didn't want to misstep. And I actually heard an interview with him, and I was actually surprised because I actually knew his brother, okay, but knew I'd seen Kevin at live performances at the Laugh Factory. You know, his brother Gary, brilliantly funny, by the way. And I have nothing but respect for both of them. Kevin has always, historically, up until this last special, I would agree with you. I think he was playing it safe. And if you heard the interview, you'd realize he knew he was playing it safe and still felt uncomfortable with the potential for a problem to arise from something that was in there. Because he didn't want to get the Chappelle treatment after the closer happened. He didn't want to, you know, get, I mean, like Jim Brewer, as an example, that gets beat up on mercilessly for just having a different take. You know,
a lot of this, I foresee a lot of that, the comedy playing it very safe, very vanilla. There's a correlation there with pro wrestling in the sense that I know pro wrestling, and nowadays, pulling again back the curtain a little bit, you've got heels and you've got baby faces. Faces and heels. Heels are the bad guys, faces are the good guys. And back in the day, you had people who were heels, who were masters at it. They could get heat with an audience. And by doing so, you become hated. That's the turn of heel. And they would get to the point, Cornette, Ric Flair, all these people talk about when they've been attacked by fans, and not just, you know, a couple of punches swung, but stabbings. People would go after these people all the time. There was a moratorium on hanging out. If you were a face and you were caught with a heel in public or riding with them, you were fired. If you were either a heel or a face, you went out to the bar and got into a bar fight, and you lost that fight, you were fired. But it's the sense that nowadays, heels can't be true heels because they can't risk people getting that angry with them.
Well, that's my point. Because it seems like we've gotten to a point in society where even somebody as, God, I mean, look, Seinfeld is one example of how do you get mad at Seinfeld for anything he says, especially on stage. But Gaffigan has taken shit. Because he had,
but how can you give Gaffigan shit? He's still funny.
How you could get upset with Seinfeld or Gaffigan is beyond me. You know what I mean? Like, it makes me wonder. We were talking a while back, on the Mother's Day episode, Moms loves R2-D2. We were talking about growing up in a environment where we would, you know, Sunday morning you'd see Abbott Costello, you'd see, you know, Bob Hope. Bing Crosby movies, you'd see Laurel and Hardy movies, you'd see all these things. And like, I can almost understand how as a comedian nowadays, you know, you do a joke and it bothers a group or whatever, though it shouldn't, all right? Chappelle was a perfect example of that. Even my son came up to me, he's like, I can't believe that you're supporting Dave Chappelle. And I'm like, look, dude, did you watch the set? He goes, I watched the clip. I go, did you watch the whole thing? He goes, no. I go, did you watch the two before it? No. Well, then shut your fucking mouth. You're taking the whole idea of where this ended out of context, right? And when I told him to actually check it out in context, he's like, oh, yeah, I guess, okay, I see that. Because he was always raised, funny's funny. But he was on a college campus. He was on a college campus. He, you know, studying political science, and obviously part of political science nowadays, they're bringing in the LGBTQ aspect of it, trans rights, so on and so forth, pronouns, and you name it, right? So that's part of it is, yeah, there's a bit of an indoctrination that goes on in the colleges. Now, some people see that as a bad thing. I don't. I think that you almost, I wish they would get back to what they were prior to politically correct speech, which is a college campus should be a safe place for all ideas to be expressed. I don't think that that's where they're at now. And now it's, if we as a student body don't like that idea, you think you're powerful, you know, university president, will get you fucking fired. And they do. So now all these educators, all these, you know, if you don't like what that professor says, we'll get him fired. And they do. So there's too much responsibility given to people who don't have an idea of what responsibility is. And there's too much fear in those who are supposed to be the responsible adults to go, no, we're not doing that. Too bad. And you don't have to like it. You're welcome to drop out. You're welcome to go to another college. You're welcome to go to any university that aligns more with your views on this. And that needs to be said, I think. Like, these kids, quite frankly, they don't know enough about what the topic is. I mean, they did interviews. They did fucking interviews with college kids and who were protesting. They're like, well, what brought you here? Well, we're trying to be supportive of the Palestinian people. Well, could you explain that? And then she turns to her friend. She's like, why are we here? And she goes, I don't know. Fucking Melissa invited us. We were just being supportive. Okay, well, you no longer have the right to be a human. you need to be shot in the fucking head.
The Kyle Rittenhouse. I know people feel one way or another about Kyle Rittenhouse, and I don't fucking care. But he was turned down to go to a university. The reason the university gave was had nothing to do with politics. Him shooting two people in the Black Lives Matter riots that took place. The university took the stance of, if we admitted him and let him in, he would be a distraction on campus.
Well,
and I understood that.
I understand that too. I think that is, you know, I'm conflicted with that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's a celebrity for a lot of wrong reasons.
Yes.
But you let a celebrity in, like Emma Watson, Harry Potter. Well, yeah, she's a celebrity for all the right reasons, but is she any less of a distraction? If that's actually what we're going with, is the distraction argument. I would say that you go, no, we don't want to let you into this campus because we are afraid for your safety and we cannot provide enough security for you. It has nothing to do with your grades. It has nothing to do with your intellect. It has to do with you are in a bad circumstance that is so volatile, especially within your age community, that we would have to provide, if you lived on campus, or even just when you were on campus, we would have to provide security for you, and we're not prepared or capable of doing that. That to me makes sense. You did something in your life that brought you into the headlines, right, wrong, or indifferent. But now, because of that, you're expecting us to provide you, whether you think you need it or you don't think you need it, we recognize that we would not feel comfortable
without providing it. And we're not in a position to provide that. We're not in a position to protect you from what we know will happen, which is either violence or harassment or it's just cruel talk, you know? The Kyle Rittenhouse thing to me is not sad because of what he did. It's sad because his parents put him in a position of being able to do that. End of story, you know? But what I'm getting at is nowadays, if you're going to be, you know, again, Dave Chappelle is probably one of the most brilliant stand-up comedians, and I use that in the purest sense of the form, one microphone, one person, and an audience. He has, in my opinion, transcended some of the best and sits on that fucking Mount Rushmore, you know, or deserves to just as much as Richard Pryor or Carlin. I mean, like, what he has done, especially in the last few years, has been absolutely insane and brilliant. And you don't have to like him to recognize that brilliance. But yeah, he's taking the chance. So he's putting himself out there and saying, you know what? This is a hill I'm going to die on. If you can kill me, but I don't think you can kill me on this hill because these are just jokes. And he's willing to take that. You see that with Louis C.K. You see that with Ricky Gervais. But when you're going after Seinfeld, when you're going after Gaffigan, what the fuck is wrong with you as a human? Gaffigan. What the fuck is the matter with you as a human being? How fucking
going after Gaffigan is like going after Kermit the Frog.
His biggest bit ever was Hot Pockets, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
This is a guy who performed stand up in the worst possible circumstances ever.
The Hot Pocket lobby is coming for him.
The worst possible environment that you could imagine trying to do stand-up in for the fucking Pope. He did stand-up. I think he opened for the Pope, if I'm not mistaken. Okay? Like, and Paul...
And genuinely a beautiful guy. He's such a nice guy. Everything I've ever seen of him, whether caught off guard by people, he is super generous and just giving. Nicest guy in the world.
But we're going to go after him because I think the big controversy with him was he said that Trump didn't win.
Well.
Okay. I think if I remember correctly, that was it. And then when he got attacked, he went, let me be clear, Trump didn't fucking win or something to that effect. And now he had said the F word and oh, I am so disappointed in you, Jim, for using foul language and oh, wait a minute. You don't know how many motherfuckers came after him, calling him everything in the book. What would it take to push Jim Gaffigan to use the F word? What would it take?
Gonna start slinging mayonnaise at everybody.
You know what I mean? Like, honestly, it's same with Seinfeld. What would it take to get him really to be fucking nasty or angry? Because those are two guys, no matter what you say... They don't care about anything other than the joke. Don't matter what the joke is, as long as it's funny.
What I've seen lately, attacking Seinfeld, isn't attacking his comedy, his background, ethnic background, whatever. But it's been the whole, well, you know, when he was 38, he was dating a 17-year-old.
Oh, is that what they're going for now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
And I'm not defending him on that. I don't have an opinion one way or another because I don't know if it's true or not.
I don't know if it's true or not. I'm guessing that with his wife.
This may come as a shock to everybody, but I don't give a fuck. It's not my life.
Okay, I'm assuming that they're talking about his wife. I think
it could be.
His wife's name. It was either... Now you're going to make me look it up, aren't you?
Do, 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 do.
Oh, don't do, do, do me.
But yeah, it's been, they've been attacking his past, which right or wrong, I don't really care, but that could be anybody in the entertainment industry ever. They're, you know,
Okay.
At one point in time, there were celebrities who were only celebrities because they were groupies. Thank you very much. This has been my TED Talk.
All right. So it was Shoshana Gross, Lonstein Gross,
okay,
who he picked up in Central Park when he was still a senior at the private Nightingale Bamford School in Manhattan, or who, when she was still a senior. Okay. So there are different circumstances in life. I think we can all agree on that. There's a difference. Wait, there's a difference.
No, go ahead.
Between 38-year-old Jerry Seinfeld dating your daughter, who's 17, and Phil from the pizza shop, who's 38 years old, dating your 17-year-old daughter. And I'm pretty sure her fucking parents knew who he was before their daughter introduced him. Because that's not happening without parents involved. And I don't even know what the age of consent is. What's the age of consent in New York?
In New York, it is. That's actually what I was looking up. It is 17.
Okay, so she's of age. And again, look, I think it's based on the fact that he was Jerry fucking Seinfeld and not Phil from the pizza shop. Okay, but as a parent, whether you like these things or not.
Who is this Phil? At what pizza shop? What was he doing?
But there's a difference between Phil at the pizza shop and that. Now, do I agree with the 38-year-old dating a 17-year-old? No, I don't. I think that it's legal. So from a point of view of, well, it's legal, and then legal's legal, that means it's okay. Whether I agree with it personally, not so much. Not so much. I don't agree with it.
I default always back to the, if it's legal, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I'm looking at it from a point of view of, would I do that? And I don't know. I don't think I would, because it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, between each other, that's got to be a very, very mature 17-year-old. And a very... Well,
let's also face it, though, women mature quicker than men.
Yeah, but she's not maturing, you know.
Well,
figure,
17-year-old...
21 years difference?
Equal to a 34-year-old male.
Well, that's true, I guess. And we're talking a stand-up comedian who's always going to be a little bit more immature. So, yeah, maybe they did hit that spot. I could see that. But, like I said, I find myself...
Right or wrong, I'm just saying, I don't give a fuck. It wasn't me. None of my business.
Yeah, it's none of my business.
I'm not here it doesn't to cast change stones anything. At other people.
And it doesn't change my life at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he ended up not marrying her. He ended up marrying, I think, Jessica is his wife's name.
Couldn't even...
I don't know. I don't care, because it's not
that's
why I'm
how
interested.
Much I'm involved.
But that's the point is that... I'm not interested in Seinfeld's personal life. I'm not interested in his wife and his kids. I don't need that in my life. I'm interested in him being a fucking stand-up. I'm interested in tell the jokes. Make me laugh. Make me think. You know? But this idea that we're going... You know, the idea that... Can you imagine? All right, let's back up.
Hey, man, I paid my $45 to come into this event and judge everybody.
Yeah, well, okay, so that's, first off, fucking stupid, right?
I have paid a fine penny to cast my vote on whether someone's good or bad in this
place. How important do people think they are?
I mean, it goes back to the Dave Chappelle's, I gotta know, hey, if you have ever said anything, done anything, I will go back on the line and find it and out you.
Yeah. So you can never grow. You can never make a mistake. You can never change your opinion or have your opinion changed. You know what I mean? You are just vile. I mean, you're
stuck in a moment of stasis where you can never change.
And how's that work out?
It doesn't. It never does.
You know, we were talking about on the Mother's Day episode, we were talking about how we were raised in many ways, watching Abbott and Costello, watching, Martin and Lewis, watching Three Stooges, watching all these different kind of like either comedy teams or you know, trios or sketch comedy. And as we got older, it was Saturday Night Live, SCTV, Mad TV, obviously a slew of sitcoms.
Let me ask you really quick. When you were little and you would turn that dial, that analog dial on a TV with the big numbers, and you turned it to like channel 38 that barely came in because it came from Canada. And you caught SCTV. Do you ever feel like this is spicy? This is from another country.
I used to feel that way about SCTV. I would feel that way about Monty Python, especially Benny Hill.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, those were great sketch comedy. I mean, you know, you think about it. I don't think people appreciate comedy in general the way that they should. Everyone says they love to laugh. Okay, but there's different types of laugh. There's a stand-up comedian, which in my opinion is the purest form of comedy. Like I said, because there's no practice. You know, you can't practice it. It happens.
You've got no one to play off.
You're going to know if that bit works. Unlike a song, you're going to know if that bit works when you do that bit.
But, you also have the people that go out there and will bomb. Not necessarily on purpose, but they relish the bomb.
Oh yeah, they want to walk the audience.
Yes,
and you get that a lot with stand-ups. I've done that. I had a show I got in trouble for this, but I told the booker, I don't fucking care, don't book that room anymore. It's a shitty room. You shouldn't be putting people in there. And just because it's making you an extra $200-$300 a week does not mean that it's a place that deserves to have even the worst comic performed there. So I get there, and the entire room, the way the room was set up, was whether they wanted to or they didn't want to, over half the room had their back to me, just because of the way the seating was, right? Yep. And like the majority of it was at a bar where they could have just turned, they just spun around on their bar stool. And I'm like, come on, guys, let's be a part of the show. You know, spin around in your bar seat. And a guy said, go fuck yourself. I said, okay. I turned around and I did the entire show with my back to the audience.
That's awesome.
Fuck them.
You know, what's even worse than that. One of the gigs I did back in the day, we were excited to, I don't even remember. Don't remember the name of the place. I know it was in Mount Clemens, Michigan. But
the Emerald?
No. This is a smaller bar. It was like a favor.
Okay.
And we played the place, packed the place. Place also had its own crowd. But the entire show, we're doing an hour on the stage, right? And the entire time, you got to figure there's a couple hundred people in here. The audience had to walk through us to get to the bathroom. So every couple of minutes, literally every couple of minutes, go ahead. Shake it more than twice. We're playing with it as we're playing.
People don't realize.
That was an interesting experience.
Yeah, people don't realize all the shit gigs you have to do, not just as you're learning and coming up, okay? But even to this day, you know, the top performers, Seinfeld, Gaffigan, you name it. I don't give a damn who you're talking about. Adam Sandler. They all end up doing corporate gigs, and 99% of them will tell you they're the worst fucking thing ever to happen. They're just a fucking nightmare. It's just collecting a check. And that's what they do, is these corporate fucking assholes hire comedians to do a circumstance which no performer, no one, maybe you could get away with it as a band because you can just be, you know, just jamming through your set and you don't have to pay attention. It's just practice. It's like fucking practicing. But aside from a band, no one could possibly turn that into a good circumstance. No one. And they're still doing it because it's a great check. And that's how they end up finally saying yes. You know, it's a corporate gig. The fucking manager or the agent or whatever called me and got a corporate gig. They want to offer, you know, $75,000 to do a show. No, I'm not doing that. Okay, I'll let them know. call back a few minutes later. They're going to offer you $100,000. I'm not going to do that. It just sounds horrible. Call back a few minutes later. They're going to give you $150,000 to do, you know, 25 minutes. You need to take that.
What time do I need?
Well, yeah, exactly. What time am I supposed to be there? Because when you get to that point, I don't care how big of an artist you are. You know, when you're talking anywhere from hundreds of thousands up to a million or more, no matter how shitty the gig is, you're just going to go, oh, well, it's, you know, an hour or two or three. It's a day of travel. You know, fuck it, I'll do it. But it's just fucking horrible. And the disrespect that people have, like, I'm really bothered. And I'm not that big of a fucking Seinfeld fan, but I'm really bothered by the fact that he was shown so much disrespect like that. For what?
And I mean, will say he took it on the chin.
Oh, no, he's a professional. He's a fucking total. And I bet you if we had him on the show right now, I bet you'd go, ah, I don't care. I got paid. Yeah, what does it matter? Ah, I forgot about it already. What's with these college kids?
I don't know why I love your Jerry.
What's with these college kids? It's up there with my Bobcat and my Cosby. But I was thinking as we were talking about it, one of the things that we did discuss, since we're talking stand-up and we're talking comedians, going back to those movies, what was your favorite team act?
Where were you at?
Favorite comedy team.
Oh, boy. That's a hard one.
Because it's... Well, here's the thing.
Go ahead.
I find it interesting because I think, like I said, to me, stand-up is the purest form. However, it came out of vaudeville, and it came a lot of times out of comedy duos. I mean, even George Carlin was part of a team originally. So when you think about it in those terms, and you realize that in this day and age, that doesn't really exist. Like when I was coming up and I was an MC or feature, there was a comedy team and they incorporated music as well, Malone and Nucci's. And they were fantastic. They were huge draws. Everyone loved them. DC Malone was every bit of a rocker kind of influence. And then Nucci's was just like this little kind of like geeky guy, right? And it was a perfect combination. It was this perfect combination. But you don't see that so much anymore, you know? I mean, yeah, me and you went from Abbott and Costello to Cheech and Chong, you know, or from Laurel and Hardy to Abbott and Costello, then to Cheech and Chong. But there's like these different categories. There's like the pure kind of duos that were presented mainly in film, but like, you know, Martin and Lewis, they did live shows. Abbott and Costello did live shows. I don't think the Three Stooges, or no, they did actually. They did do live
shows. Oh, they did?
Yeah, prior to them getting into the shorts and then eventually into the movies. But there's so many great combinations where the chemistry just works well. Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor, there was just a chemistry.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
They're going to be in my top 10.
Oh, God. How could they not be?
I've got... It couldn't be a Mount Rushmore because there's more than four.
And people don't think about that. I don't think people think about that in the same vein as just stand-up. Because, like I said, nowadays, there might be two or three. I know that they're, I don't know if they're husband and wife or if they're, I don't know what their relationship is, but there is a male and female I've seen clips of online that are pretty funny, but you know that it's a script. And I think that that's the reason why it doesn't work. You know what I mean? I think that that's the reason why it doesn't necessarily work nowadays is that audience wants the, if not, the opportunity for spontaneity, they want the feeling of authenticity. And I think that stand-up gives you a feeling, even though you know that it's worked out bits. Like, I think the audience is hip to that now. And they know that you're doing the same show
in Chicago as you're doing in Houston, and that it may be a little bit different or a little bit better depending on where you are in the tour. But I think that they understand that. However, they give in to the illusion because of the authenticity in which the material is delivered. And I don't think that you can get that so much as a team act. All right. So I don't think that there's any modern day versions of Cheech and Chong necessarily. However, if you go into like a movie circumstance, or you go into a like a buddy comedy, there's some great, great examples. You know what I mean? Like a modern day.
Well, right off the bat for me, obviously you got Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor, but also John Candy and Steve Martin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If you go back, you got Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance, who was, you know, Lucy and Ethel. David Spade and Chris Farley. Here's the best modern day version, I think, though, or there's two I would give. Jay and Silent Bob and Key and Peele. They pulled it off. You know what I mean? But back in the day, you had like Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. Obviously, you had Laurel and Hardy, the Marx Brothers, which was more of an ensemble. If you go more current, you could argue
Jackie Chan and
Chris Tucker. Yeah. And I don't think these guys are getting the same kind of, well, with the exception of The Rock and Kevin Hart. I think they're starting to pull that Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello string.
Kevin Hart also has done those movies with Ice Cube, which are really funny.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a matter of chemistry.
And I just want to bring up two groups here that may not get the recognition that they deserve in the world of comedy. Number two would be the Tom and Jerry.
You're right.
And the brilliance, actually, of Tom and Jerry, because there's never any dialogue. It is all visual.
It's all physical. It's all physical comedy.
And it's a cartoon. But the thought that went into those situations, it's hysterical.
Not in a team setting, but with the idea of no necessarily verbal aspect. And again, this is a bit of diversion, but Mr. Bean.
Oh yeah. In that same vein.
You know what I mean?
Mr. Bean. Yeah.
He to me, Mr. Bean is like a modern day Chaplin.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
and that's not the only funny things he's done. Cause there's also Blackadder.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, he's done a bunch of stuff, but that
number one,
that particular character, I think is a very good example of trying to, when you're looking back at Laurel and Hardy, or and you're looking back at, you know, Martin and Lewis, you're looking back at Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, you know what I mean? Like the Three Stooges, even kind of these like iconic, you know, 40s, 50s.
Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye.
Yeah, there were a ton of them.
But my number one that most people do not talk about.
SpongeBob and Patrick, right? It's SpongeBob. Okay. No.
I've actually never seen a SpongeBob show before.
Three but it hours wounds me later.
How many people ignore them. But Statler and Waldorf. That name is going right over your head.
No, it's the Muppets. It's the guys. It's the old guys. I'm totally on board with you. And you're right.
I absolutely adore. My objective in life was to become one of them.
I would love that. That to me was, and the thing was, is even as a kid, you were hip to the joke. They were the cranky old men.
Yeah.
But you were still in on the joke. And the fact that they were able to make kind of that more sophisticated humor land with a 7-year-old, that's pretty impressive. You know what I mean? That's good writing. That's
it's bridging the age gap.
Old
men in the balcony. You sit a high above all of the action and just heckle.
All right.
And it was always funny.
All right. Here's where I think we should leave it. And this is the most ridiculous question I've probably ever asked you.
Pick your Mount Rushmore of Muppets.
Of Muppets.
Ah!
Oh, boy. Mount Rushmore of Muppets. No self-respecting Muppet connoisseur can bypass. Kermit the Frog was the ultimate straight man until he did something silly.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have Kermit up there. You can go to the Fozzie Bear, and that is
Oh, wait, shit. Oh, all right. Hold on. Hold that thought. Hold on. The question that's running rampant on social media with women is bear or man? And if the bear is Fozzie Bear, picking the bear.
He might get killed by a joke.
Yeah.
Hey.
What was he? What was his
waka, question? Waka, 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 waka. Well, you could pick the Foz. And Fozzie is cool. I'm down with the Foz. But a more, how shall I say, a more sophisticated palette that I have for Muppets. If you could put the word Muppet in with a phrase like sophisticated palette.
Yeah, it's a stretch, but let's go.
I would have to go with Grover.
Well, Grover wasn't actually a Muppet. He was actually Sesame Street.
Yes, but who did Sesame Street?
Well, it was Jim Henson, but the...
He's still a Muppet.
Okay, by that logic then, anything that was a Dark Crystal or Fraggle Rock...
Yes, I'm talking all Muppet.
I'm talking the Muppet Show.
Oh, just the Muppet Show.
Just the Muppet Show.
Just the Muppet
Show. Take Sesame Street out. You got to take Fraggle Rock out. You got to take Dark Crystal out. Take all that other shit out. All brilliant, okay? But I'm talking, there was a level of brilliance with the Muppet Show as a weekly variety show comedy that I don't think has been done before or since. And I think that that holds a special place in history. So if we're going just off the Muppet Show, we got Kermit. Are you still taking Fozzie or are you?
I'm not taking Fozzie because I think that's an easy way out. In the same case, I have to discount Grover, but I will raise you a Gonzo.
Oh, you gotta love Gonzo. I loved Gonzo.
Gonzo was the man.
I loved Gonzo.
Gonzo was the lovable loser.
Yeah. As Bob Seger would say, he was the beautiful loser.
That's right. I would also add in, you know,
Are you going to go? Are
Waldorf.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Are you taking Gonzo with or without Camilla the Chicken?
Either way.
Okay.
I love Gonzo. Gonzo is probably my number one. But I have a soft spot for Sweetums.
Okay. Sweetums.
There's something magical about Sweetums. Are you familiar with a Sweetums?
Yeah, Sweetums was the big...
The big monster.
The big monster,
was lovable. But it's such a hard choice because Kermit, Gonzo, Waldorf, and Statler and Waldorf. But you also had Beaker and the Professor.
I loved Beaker.
There was a funny moment that I actually still can't stop laughing about. The Muppets, back in WWE, they had a night, Monday Night Raws, that had special guest general managers. And one night they had the Muppets as the special general managers for the evening. And one of the wrestlers was talking trash to Beaker, you know, picking on him, making fun of him. And Beaker's just being Beaker. And Sheamus, the wrestler, comes walking up, looks at the other wrestler and assaults him and looks at Beaker like he's going to kill Beaker. Now, in retrospect, Seamus is Irish. He's very pale and has red hair that stands straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks straight at Beaker, gives him a dirty look, and then smiles and says, "Cousin Beaker, what have you been up to?" Because they look alike.
That's funny.
And nobody saw that fucking coming.
Oh.
Comedy goal. Comedy goal.
All right. So
what you got? Huh? What you got?
So your four are Kermit the Frog, Beaker.
Maybe.
All right. Lay them out for me again. Kermit the Frog.
Kermit, Gonzo. Olaf, and Statler and Waldorf, because I feel like you can't separate them.
You can't separate
them.
They're
going to be one.
Yeah, that falls as one.
And because of that, I will put Beaker in there, because Beaker talked, but you don't know what he's saying.
Okay, so Beaker was one of my favorites. I loved it. Me. Oh, I loved that.
Yes.
I thought it was fucking great. And Statler and the whole thing, absolutely. So those two, one or two. Here's going to be the surprise for you, though. For me, Rizzo the Rat.
I wanted to put Rizzo in there, but I thought it was a little too on the nose. But Rizzo is absolutely hysterical.
I loved Rizzo. And I'm going to tell you the other one that I'm a little bit conflicted here. All right.
Well, let me first tell you this. In A Muppet's Christmas Carol, which is still one of my favorite holidays.
It's a great holiday movie.
It opens up with Gonzo and Rizzo, because they're the narrators. And Gonzo looks at the camera and says, "I am here to tell you a tale." And Rizzo looks at the camera and goes, "And I am here for the food."
So, all right.
I love that. So I totally get Rizzo the Rat.
All right. So Statler and Waldorf are... obviously, and I think both of us love them, not just because of their comedic value, but it also used to, those two used to crack mom and dad up.
Yes, they did. Mom and dad
would crack up over those two. The other one, and this is where I find myself a little bit conflicted, because it wouldn't have been my choice, but I remember every time this character came on, I would look to mom, because I knew she would crack up. The Swedish Chef.
I'm wondering.
Swedish chef. She always
the other one that
bork bork. Gets, she just thought that was the funniest fucking thing.
The other one that gets an honorable mention from me, I don't remember his name, but it's the dude that had the throwing fish.
Oh God! No, that was Gonzo.
No, there's a different guy. It was not Gonzo. Gonzo had the chickens. This dude had throwing fish.
I remember that.
Oh. I'm going to have to look this up now.
I'm looking at it right now, too.
Bum, 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 bum. Lou Zealand
yes.
was his name.
Lou Zealand. Yeah, that's a great name. Good old Lou Zealand throwing fish. So while, obviously, you've already picked Gonzo, so I'm not going to pick Gonzo. You already picked Kermit the Frog. I'm not going to pick Kermit. Although I love Kermit the Frog. I love Miss Piggy. Love Sweetums. Obviously, Animal. You know, the whole band, actually.
You could honestly say between Kermit and Miss Piggy, there is a bridge between them and Allens and Burns.
I would agree with you, absolutely. Because they were really set up as a George Burns and Gracie kind of setup. Here's one. Well, all right. So honorable mention for me, Space Pigs. That sketch. I used to love...
Pigs and Space.
I used to love Pigs in Space. I don't know why, but every time there was this, it kind of reminded me of, like, what was it? Not Swiss Family Robinson.
Lost in Space.
Thank you. Now, I will tell you one of my favorite.
I wanted to be in on the corporate conversation where that idea is pitched.
I know.
see, it's Lost in Space mixed with Star Trek, but
it's pigs.
Pigs.
See, that's the thing that always catches me, is because I've been in those pitch meetings.
You know what I mean? Like, I've been in those pitch meetings. I've sat it, you know, in Paramount Studios with pitching a sitcom idea to the president of comedy at the time. I've been at Showtime pitching ideas. Like, I've had this experience. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at these sketches or you look at these shows and you think, how in the fuck did that get a green light? Like, how did that conversation go? Right? It blows my mind. All right. But
like the Belushi and the samurai skit. That's on our life.
Yeah. So like that's a pitch within so the show's already accepted, right? So the show's already going. Now it's you just have to pitch different sketch ideas. So that's a little bit easier. It's not as much pressure. So you just go, hey, you know what? I got nothing. Let's talk about a samurai who makes cheeseburgers. Okay. Well, now you've got my attention. You know, like when you're talking ridiculous, you got my attention. All right. So here, and we'll put a pin in it after this, but this one's going to surprise you. All right.
All right.
And I didn't know why.
Rise away.
I didn't know why I enjoyed him at the time. Actually, I think I found him a little bit creepy and awkward at the time. But
I'm
going
to have to watch Muppet Show now.
I know you will.
We're done. I'm going to have to watch.
So the one that to this day I recognize in a newscaster.
I almost brought that up.
Sam Eagle.
Yep.
And every time I see Anderson Cooper, all I see is Sam Eagle.
Yep.
Anderson Cooper, as he has aged, Anderson Cooper has become Sam Eagle. And
if we ever get a show, we're going to have Sam the Eagle and Anderson Cooper read the news.
Well, I would just like to see them both in the same room at the same time to make sure it's not the same thing. The other part is,
I can tell you why it's not the same thing. All you need to do is listen to Anderson Cooper laugh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my laugh is obnoxious. His is ridiculous. But they've got, and I wish I could remember her name right now. Oh, shit. Now I gotta look. I gotta look real quick before we put a pin in it. Oh, there's a female CNN anchor or female CNN reporter who looks like Janice.
Janice.
From the Muppets. I can't find it right now. I'm going to have to look for that, and we'll report on that later.
Along the same lines, how can you leave out, oh, gosh, see, now I feel bad, as if it's a real person. The Muppet that plays the piano. I'm trying to fit my tongue.
It's not Rolf, is it?
Yes, thank you, Rolf. I couldn't think of it.
Yeah, Rolf the dog.
Of course, you got Animal. I didn't go with the obvious, which was Animal.
I think everyone
Animal, who was actually based on Keith Moon.
I think everyone loves Animal, and I think that you have to, it's almost like if you're talking Game of Thrones characters, you almost have to go, pick your favorite character, it can't be Jon Snow. Like, you almost have to rule him out, because it's obvious. Oh. Everyone loves Jon Snow, everyone loves Animal.
Oh, you could also put Tyrion in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, that's what we should talk about next time. Well, next time, hopefully we'll have my buddy Kirk Nolan, but that's something we should talk about is Game of Thrones.
Oh, all right, before we have Kirk on, we got to throw at him something ridiculous. I don't want to do the same Muppet Mount Rushmore, but something ridiculous like that. What could we throw at him?
No, I don't see why not hitting him with the Muppets, but... Yeah, we could do that. We could figure something.
We'll put the Muppet in the back pocket in case we can't think of anything better.
I can actually, how much you want to bet I can pick his Mount Rushmore from his childhood?
Oh, really?
I bet you I can.
We'll get it on tape.
Well, I'm going to predict it ahead of time. Okay.
Yep.
And there's only a variant of one or two here. Okay. So, Evil Knievel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Liberace.
Really?
Elvis. Because all three of them wore capes. Okay. Now, the variant in this is whether it's Muhammad Ali or Bruce Lee. That's the variant. But from his childhood, the Mount Rushmore of Kirk Nolan's childhood, who, if everything goes well, will be on the next episode. My guesses are Evel Knievel, Liberace, Elvis, and I'm going to lean Ali. I'm going to lean Ali, but I got room for Bruce Lee. But I'm pretty sure that that would be his Mount Rushmore of his childhood. So that would be an interesting question. That would be an interesting question to ask him. All right, with that, I think that's it. That's it for this LC's Little Pickles.